in a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Just heard that cowboy theme song, and you can hear my voice. It sounds rather like a gentle meadowlark singing in a green glade. And you know this, the Chicago Way is back. We're back because Jeff Carlin was able to climb that wall with Mexico, where he'd spent some time on his paying job with Rokan. So what are we going to talk about? Christian McQuarrie, Tribune columnist and editorial board member, joins us. And so does guest chief judge of the Cook County Circuit Court, Tim Evans. The two of us go way back, to the 80s and Armani suits in City Hall. But first, what about Jeff's trip? And what about Kristen's take on the thousands of economic refugees running from Illinois? And we'll take your questions that you posted on Facebook, including that recipe for Vladimir Putin, Donald Trump, Russian borscht soup. Well, after a brief, is it hiatus or hiatus?
Workation.
Or, yeah, after a workation, we're back. The Chicago Way, John Cass and Jeff Carlin recently home from, Jeff's recently home from his Mexican trip. And with us, Christian McQuarrie. Last we saw her, she had her lovely daughter, Ellie.
I did.
I put her in the paper. Was that okay?
Oh, I didn't know. Oh, yes, yeah. Yes, you did. Yes, and it was perfectly fine. She loved it. She listened to the podcast. She thought she was on live radio. I didn't correct her.
Nah.
And Mr. Carlin, how was it hanging out with Rokan, Anna, and hundreds of your closest friends in Mexico?
It was a lot of fun.
When did the drinking start?
Well, let's see. The flight landed. I kid you not. The flight landed, and so we was, you know, an all-inclusive Apple vacation thing. They helped us on, and we had these very fancy air-conditioned vans, thank God, because, as you know, I'm very pale. And I don't agree with the sun very well.
You look you have some color now, though.
A little bit of color.
You're a little bit pink today.
This where we flew into, Huatulco, Mexico, in Oaxaca, which is like South Pacific coast. I burned my ear coming off the plane, walking to the actual customs facility.
You walked 100 feet and you burned your ear?
Yeah, it was like 100 yards, and then we had to stand in line because there's only like really one hut for this place. It's a small airport. And my ear was burned. I'm like, Christine, is my ear red? And of course it was. And it was all of 6 minutes in the sun.
Did you have like a floppy white hat for the rest of the trip?
I did. I tried.
I do. I do too.
Yeah. I use one.
My delicate
Michigan.
Irish skin.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
You have to.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a good trip. We had 100 listeners come with us for a week, Saturday to Saturday. And before we even got into our air-conditioned van to take us to our resort, they had beers waiting for us, so that was nice.
What about like rum drinks though? This is the
mezcal.
This is the idea. You're laying in your chair, right? As parents, we can say this because this is like the fantasy of parents when we can get away from the kids. You're in the chair, you raise your hand, you don't even have to say anything. And somebody puts in a frozen rum thing,
mm-hmm.
like a daiquiri or something, right?
Yeah, the big one down there, they call it the iceberg. It was Modelo beer on tap. Then they would make a batch of frozen lemon margaritas, and they would scoop that frozen lemon margarita and float it in the beer.
Sounds delightful.
That was the best.
When I turned 40, I went on a group trip to
Cancun.
We mean
when you turned 40?
When I turned 40, right, no. And
she's still like 20. She just got out of Mother Macaulay like 2 weeks ago.
I was so excited about a swim-up bar. And the place we went, that was my, I offered no help in planning the trip. I just wrote a check. But I said, if you can find a place that has a swim-up bar. On the memo line. It was fantastic. You just slink into the water. Little doggy paddle over, sit in the water and drink your beverage of choice.
They have chairs in the water.
They have chairs in the water.
Little stools usually built in. And then they did this place. They would do bingo every day at like 2 p.m. And then they would have
floating bingo.
Yeah, right there at the pool smoke bar, you do bingo, and then they had weird drinking games later. But I was not a part of that.
Did you do any fishing?
No fishing, John.
We did. Was there fishing?
There was fishing. Some people they almost caught a marlin, I think, or something.
Uh-huh.
And then a couple of people went snorkeling and scuba diving, saw some rays and. Christine and I did some open sea kayaking.
Any hunting? Like for any, like a good Mexican thing would be like, let's bet on how many pigeons we can knock down, like wild pigeon shooting type of thing.
No.
I don't think Apple Vacations would allow
that. Yeah,
no. With beautiful hand-engraved Beretta shotguns and some guy like Anthony Quinn bringing you a sangria. Yes, my friend.
No.
Like that?
Not that fun. But Brian Altimer did see somebody walking an aardvark on a leash.
Oh, my God.
So
really?
That was pretty cool. No, we actually, Christine and I took a trip into the mountains, the Sierra Madre Mountains, to a coffee plantation and bought some fresh roasted coffee. This guy roasted it right in front of us for us. That was pretty sweet.
Nice. So I want to know
badges?
On these.
Badges?
I don't want to call these junkets necessarily, but what's the division of between work and pleasure?
Sure.
What percentage?
So on this specific trip, I would probably say 80-20 pleasure to work, luckily for us. It was quite a deal. We flew in Saturday, and we were, you know, hung out with the listeners. There's a big party that night, and then Sunday we kind of hung out with them in the pool and met and greeted with them. Had to do a little bit of planning.
Did Monaco come?
No, he did not.
Because I wanted to think of him in the swim-up bar. Okay.
So anyway, then we did 2 days of shows on Monday, Tuesday with everybody in the crowd, and then the rest of the time was at our leisure, according to our official schedule.
So you only did two shows?
Did two shows, which were tough because Mexico is not known for its telecommunications and its internet.
Oh, okay.
So it's tough on him.
Yeah, don't give me it's tough.
Well, it was tough because we were worried we wouldn't get it going.
It's tough.
Two people got severely shocked by electricity while we were setting up our stage.
Really?
Yeah.
But it worked. When's the Cass McQuarrie junket?
Yeah.
Mexico.
Huh? Sure, man. We
would take one to where would we go?
Would we go to
Greece?
Same place. Would you show us around?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Is it John's heritage? That'd be a great
show. John traces his roots.
John traces his roots, and I trace the similarities between finances in Greece and finances of Illinois.
There you go.
As everyone leaves.
As everyone leaves.
Because they're all leaving.
Yes.
Right.
They are.
Kristen, again, another year of more stories about people leaving. And at the same time, I've got to read crap in newspapers, sorry, not from you, which don't make it crystal clear what the bleep is happening. People are leaving. They can't stand their property taxes. They can't stand the corruption. They can't stand the crime. They're fleeing.
I know.
Jeez.
Isn't it insane? So there was another story this week that Chicago is among the biggest municipalities to be losing population. We know Illinois in 2016 lost more residents than any other state in the nation. And I'm sure you get them. I get emails probably several times a week.
I'm leaving.
From
I'm
people,
gone.
Or I'm gone. I'm writing to you from Texas because I couldn't stand Illinois. And a lot of them are actually going to other Midwestern states. This is not weather. This is not all I want to be in the sun, because Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan, those are places where people are also moving. Nashville. So it's crazy. And then we have all these financial difficulties. And so people don't understand that the people who have the means to leave are leaving. That means people who pay taxes. And there's no concept of grasping that in the legislature.
I think in journalism, to tell you the truth, it's almost like, yes, this is happening, but we'll still take whatever talking points Madigan and the Democrats give us. And that's fine, but at least have a little context here. I mean, these publics, you've seen what Dan Proft has been doing with the property taxes?
Yes, I have.
You've noticed this thing? He's got these little papers, and he does, you know, he focuses on the property tax disparities in suburban Cook and elsewhere. It's crazy.
I have been listening to his stories. They emphasize how outrageous property taxes are here. And part of that is because state government is broke, and so school districts are having to rely more heavily on local property taxpayers to fund their schools. But then you also have this huge disconnect. Okay, April 4th are local elections. I looked
at school board elections too, all over.
Yes. Tons of referenda. Go look and see all the fire department districts, all the school districts, the libraries, village halls, where they are asking to increase your property taxes to either build something really cool and pretty and shiny.
Because we need a new school in Skokie, even though the last one doesn't have enough kids.
Hinsdale asking for approval to sell $76 million in bonds for a new aquatic center for the high school. So my only, I want Dan Prof's stories to eventually tie this all together, that you cannot sit there and complain about your property taxes if you're not focusing on your school board, because that's where most of your money goes. And if you still want the fancy stuff, you can't have both. Don't build a new fancy diving well at Hinsdale South or Central and then go around and complain that your property taxes are too high.
Not only fancy diving, and this is coming from a fellow, me, with a wife who's a teacher and a son who wants to be a teacher. I'm not against teachers, but it's almost like everyone's leaving. Thousands and thousands of people are leaving. Started the segment. People are leaving. And those who remain are what? Less off, less well off, and they're subsidizing the public employee union so they can have great pensions while you eat dog food when you're old. Where's the logic in this? So people just say, I'm out of here, and they go. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's why Rick Pearson, our political reporter, has a story in the Tribune this week that talks about Democrats protecting their funding base because they're up against Rauner, who can self-finance. They are protecting unions. That's why we haven't had pension reform. That's why all of our state money and all of your taxes are primarily going to fund I shouldn't say primarily, but a large chunk of what you pay to state government is funding a pension system that is unsustainable. It's mind-boggling. It's hard to talk about and without my blood pressure just.
And then on top of it, the federal bureaucracy is now bringing dogs to work.
I know, that's
so
a great
call. So that's like making me sick, because that's all the dog caca. Cacastocracy, what is it called?
I do kind of want you to bring Zeus to work.
Yeah.
Though.
That's what they were saying. They were saying that you've seen Zeus. He was like, he loves Betty. He loves the girls.
Yes.
He loved you too.
He was such a good boy, and you were trying to keep him in the other room, and I just can still hear his little cries.
Yeah, but what if he assaults he's an intact male. And so, I know that's illegal in many journalism circles, right?
Oh,
isn't it? I mean,
referring
at least not. Maybe, yes, of course. Maybe he of course.
I'm just.
But maybe he should be, like, gentled or something chemically before I take him down here.
Maybe you need to transition him.
That's
start
up to
giving him.
That's up to him whether he wants me to cut
whether
them off
Whether he wants
or not.
To squat
he'll
or lift me, his leg.
He'll tell me.
I'll let you know.
Please cut off my special purpose and I'll be, whatever he says is up to him. But if I bring him, what if he assaults someone's leg like the?
Yeah,
like
that's true. He might, and then all hell would break loose around here.
Oh my God! Can you imagine?
No,
it would be one thing if it was the publisher. At least the guy, Bruce is my friend. He would just kick him.
His dog's probably
fixed
too,
right? Mm-hmm. But perhaps some others around here might be,
offended.
Yeah,
yeah. It's very politically incorrect to not fix your dog. Then.
Speaking of which, I can't fix my dog, but I can fix our relationship with our listeners
yes.
on this podcast.
Let's get to our questions.
Because we've been gone for 2 weeks now, and people on Facebook have been saying, when's a podcast? When's a podcast? Right, Jeff Carlin?
They
I always
sure
blame
have.
Jeff.
I'm the fall guy.
You're the fall guy. So we put out, questions. What questions do you have? I'm going to read one, and I put it under the Nighthawks painting by Edward Hopper. Because you can, if you look closely, you can see Christian McQuarrie and Jeff Carlin in
the picture.
I'm in
the fancy dress, right?
Yes.
You're in the red dress, Jeff's in the suit, and I'm the old guy behind the counter. Okay. So we're going to read this one from Reno Pauly. I have a question. Ask Reno. Is that a fake name? I have a question. How come nobody can pin down Mike Madigan for an interview on the state of the state and how it is legal for him to be an elected official and be the lawyer that gets big tax breaks for corporations and rich people, among the many questions that the panel can throw his way.
Mm-hmm.
What say you? Answer Reno Pauly, please.
So Mike Madigan has gone through, he's been House Speaker for, 32 years out of 34?
Three decades, I believe.
Three decades. He was accessible and he did do interviews for a number of years. Then he went through a long period in the 90s where he just felt like he was just getting beat up so much, so he no longer gave interviews.
Why does he have to do interviews when he sets the entire agenda and reporters have to eat out of Steve Brown's hand in Springfield or they get cut off and then they'll get mocked anonymously by that odious little creature or whatever his name is in the blog down there.
I mean, that is part. He has a communications director, Steve Brown, so he relies on him. He did do press conferences sort of out of character for him, Mike Madigan, last year when he was back and forth with Rauner. He does answer these questions. If you ask him about state finances, he will tell you that it was a bipartisan mistake, that Republicans, too, were in cahoots, and they're also to blame. So he does sort of shoulder some of the blame for the state of the state. I would argue, Nessie, the other issue is I don't think he gets a lot of follow-up questions from the media.
When God speaks, you just...
They just kind of take
him at it. Oh, the bush is burning, Mike. Thanks for the burning bush.
There are a lot of microphones in Mike Madigan's face sometimes when he's walking through the Capitol, and he answers questions, and they just kind of let things hang out there. Whereas I was down there once when he was talking to reporters, and so was Bruce Rauner. Reporters were literally screaming at Bruce Rauner, like yelling out questions, not letting him get away with half answers, which I appreciate, but they don't do the same thing with Mike Madigan.
Oh, I don't know. Is that because reporters are generally enthralled to government and big government and liberals?
I think Mike Madigan has created this aura of the all-powerful, that he's very intimidating. You know, he's very intimidating. And in fact, he's not. He's just a dude. And so people treat him with this, with kid gloves. And so, and the issue of his he has a property tax appeal business. He will tell you that he's extremely careful about separating those roles. And there's no, you know, he doesn't have to be blatant about steering business to his buddies and his pals and, you know, helping others make money off of state government. People just know it. You know, if you have a bill in Springfield, there are certain lobbyists that you hire if you want to get the attention of the speaker, if you want your bill to move. It's just the way it is.
Here's one for Jeff Carlin.
Uh-oh.
From Nancy Katz. Kat, no relation, Kaz. Let's talk about Romgate and make book on who will be the next mayor. This means about the emails and all that.
Yeah.
We may need to discuss the Tribune going so far left that I may cancel my digital subscription. Oof. Local elections are soon and far more brutal than usual. It should be interesting. They may need to dredge the I&M canal before it's over. Yes. Respond, Jeff.
Yeah. I agree with all of that. The Romgate thing is appalling.
Well, the Tribune's going too far left to you?
No. What? No, not at
it
all.
It still has Kristen and me.
Yes, I know.
We're like, please don't forget us.
That was a pretty interesting story in the reporting this week on Rom. And everybody who's ever emailed Rahm Emanuel is now may owe thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, in ethics laws violations.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting. As who's the next mayor, I don't know. I don't know. I know who I would, maybe I'd want to be the next mayor, but I don't know who it will be.
What about that emailing business, Kristen? I recall there was one columnist in town who found a quote that Rahm Emanuel gave.
Oh my gosh, that was so precious.
And said, I'd never mix my private with my public,
right?
Because that's what I do.
He was asking about,
and Geppetto,
he was responding to the Hillary Clinton.
Right, and then he wanted to be a real boy.
Mm-hmm. Should we be surprised that politicians lie? But, you know.
But some speak
Is
Russian.
Anybody, who else is calling him out? You know, the Tribune, obviously, in our front page story and your column. But there is one little silver lining in all of this, and that is the Chicago Board of Ethics for years has been this just do-nothing board. While all these aldermen are marching off to prison, the Ethics Board hasn't found a single violation.
Who, me?
Against an alderman.
Who appoints the Ethics Board?
The mayor.
The mayor of Chicago.
The mayor.
So please, will you please babysit me and look over my shoulder?
Yes, but now I do have faith in Bill Conlon. You interviewed him for your column. He's only been there since October, but he was the one who said, sorry, Alderman, you can't get cheap tickets to the World Series.
That was good.
You can't go to opening day at Sox Park. I know these are little things, but he is kind of dismantling what is considered to be just the Chicago way. What do you mean we can't go get the free skybox?
But my reading of the vaunted ethics law, which the mayor passed and said, this is transparency, this is why I should be mayor, because not because I'm wearing a soft little pink sweater and
it was baby blue. It was baby blue.
Baby blue sweater and talking in soft terms about how much I want to be a good mayor now. It was the ethics thing. So I read it. And it says clearly, Article 2, Section whatever I was talking to, Conlon was asking me the site, like he didn't know. Of course, he's a top lawyer. He knew what it was. That part didn't get in the column. And it says, if you if you're a city official and you allow this to happen and you don't report it yourself, you're subject to sanctions, perhaps firing. Will the mayor fire himself, Jeff Carlin?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he'd admit it, no.
But they did set the precedent, which you also raised with David Plouffe. And, I mean, he had to pay, that's a big fine.
Yeah.
Was it $76,000? It was
$90,000. Most of it was $1,000 a day for every day he didn't report.
Yeah.
That he lied.
I love that law.
That is a big whip crack, because I'm telling you, the State Board of Elections, when they fine someone, it might be like $2,000.
Yeah.
The politicians all look at that like, oh my God, I had to work so hard to raise that money. So 90 right. grand, that's a lot of money.
Well, we're talking $13.9 million in possible fines.
Yeah.
According to the Tribune.
Can that money go to the schools?
Ruth Hart and Hal Dardick.
Or the roads. Tip.
What?
Say, what do we do with that money? Can it go to the roads or schools?
Gosh, I don't know. Maybe it kicks back to the board of running the Board of Ethics office. I don't know where that money goes. That's a good question, but we'll see. I mean, do I think that they're going to smack Rahm with nothing? I don't know how they could get away with that, and I don't know that they would go as far as to say he owes millions, but all of those lobbyists, now that they've kind of set the precedent with Plouffe, how can they not?
Well, Rahm, technically, as a city official, wouldn't be responsible to pay a fine, but I brought up this thing to Conlin, and he politely declined comment because it's like not a serious question, but it is kind of.
Well, they're
Which
reviewing
is, shouldn't
it, right?
Rahm, shouldn't Rahm pay himself? He let all his friends, these are all his buddies, these are all these insiders, lawyers that contribute to him. Okay, now it's like, Rahm, you didn't tell us about this. Now we're in a jam. So Rahm digs in his pocket, pays their $13.9 million fine himself, or he holds a fundraiser in which bond buyers worried about whether or not they're going to be first in line
out.
The whole system collapses any bleeping second, come in and duke them, and then pay the fine.
Well, and the reason this is important is there are...
What's wrong with that ethic?
Nothing. That probably is what happens. People have fundraisers all the time to pay down debts, and for the lobbyists who are following the rules, who are filing their paperwork, who are reporting, you know, if they give a gift over $50 or whatever, who are paying their annual fee, you have to pay a fee to register, you know, in their interest, this should be taken very seriously, because there are people following the rules, and the people using private email accounts to access him and lobby him on stuff should be called out.
Exactly. Here's another one. This is for Jeff Carlin. Not that, and you can join in,
too. No, last one's for me, too.
From Ellen Karp.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, this is for talkative today. This is, okay, for Kristen, from Ellen Karp. Here's another one. I think she's speaking about the Trump story, you know, where Trump is the little cat of the Ernest Blofeld Bond villain Putin, and he sits in the lap of
the
Putin,
cat.
And Putin strokes his orange hair, just like the Bond villain. Because the Russians are going to take over any second now, according to what I read in many papers, including, you have to say it, certain op-eds in my own, where apparently Putin is controlling us all. Or that's the general sense that I get, being not smart enough.
You just haven't been chipped yet.
Yeah.
The rest
smart
of us
enough
have been chipped.
You haven't had the borscht yet.
All right, here's the question. Ellen Karp, what's a really good Russian borscht recipe?
I got it.
You do?
10 cups of water, 3 potatoes.
See, I told you that was the right question
broth.
For me.
You got a great broth and carrots, dice one onion.
Start over again?
Okay.
She's just
this
so
is
good.
Classic.
This is classic McQuarrie, because
I'm
she's
ready.
The one with
there
all her
There is nothing
notes.
That you can ask me that I will
go
not
on,
answer. 2 beets, 2 potatoes, cooking oil, 1 medium onion, carrots, 2 carrots, head of cabbage, a can of kidney beans, 2 bay leaves, 10 cups of water, 6 cups of chicken broth, 5 tablespoons of ketchup, 4 tablespoons lemon juice, half teaspoon freshly ground pepper, chopped dill. Throw it all in a big, big pot. Let it simmer for several hours until it gets nice and red. The beets kind of bleed into all of that soup. And then you top it with a little sour cream. There you go.
And,
bam!
And you take your little, you know, that electronic whipper thing, you know, that you put in the pot. You know,
immersion blender.
Immersion.
Thank you.
Whatever. I'm not a writer. Immersion blender, and then you chill it in the fridge.
Oh, okay. See,
and then
I
you put a
part.
Little dollop of sour cream.
Well, we had.
Oh, shmakuya! I feel like if I have some of that,
yeah.
I want to have the Russian international thinking of the Russians marching into Washington, because any second now,
it's going to happen.
It's going to happen, right, Jeff Carlin?
John Cass, I think you've been watching too much Americans. the Americans
have been... No, I've just been reading the Washington Post. I've been reading the Washington Post as it's translated here in Chicago in certain regions, certain websites that use those Washington Post fantasy stories, which I guess cover up the fact that Hillary lost. But it's all the Russians, right?
Sure. I have a Borscht-related anecdote from my trip, by the way. One of the fine all-inclusive restaurants we were at was like a steakhouse of sorts. They offered...
In Mexico?
In Mexico. They offered... they called it a beef juice soup, and it was like a beef stew. But on the menu, it was like juego de carne, so it was like beef juice soup.
Do you like it?
I don't like beef, so I didn't have any. But
well, then I won't tell you to go to Los Gallos.
Yeah.
On Archer Avenue near Harlem, one on near Kedzie, and the other basically down in the old neighborhood. They have the carne and segugo. It's so good.
I'm so hungry right now. That sounds wonderful.
Here's another one. Wait, I had one about judges. Someone asked me, Bob Donahue. Can citizens research the name of lenient judges that continue to free people who have been arrested several times for the same offense? We're going to have Tim Evans on in a little bit. And, I hope he'll talk about
Chief that. Judge.
Yeah, Chief Judge.
That is, it's hard to actually, there's no like data point that you could search that. The only time we learn about it is when a judge screws up and then it becomes a big story. But that's a good question, and it is something that should be compiled.
Now, you've written about this, and I have written about it, and the Tribune has editorialized on the need for laws that will make it tougher for repeat felons, meaning thug gangbangers who like to shoot guns, to make it harder for judges to show leniency to those felons.
Unlawful use of a weapon, UUW.
Right? UUW, aggravated UUW by a felon, yeah. And it seems that the Black Caucus in Springfield doesn't really want to push it because, I don't know, they don't want to offend anybody. Mike Madigan would go for it because it's an easy thing for him to point to, but doesn't want to do it unless the Black Caucus is all in line, so he doesn't, you know, he cares more about his power than he does about children being shot. The Republicans would kind of go for it as long as it doesn't mean that average, you know, shop owners can't protect themselves. Now, what do you make of all this, Kristen? You know Springfield and how it works.
I think, everything you said is accurate. Those are all the different interest groups who are peeling away support. Now it's moving in the Senate, and you even had a split among the Black Caucus because you have Kwame Raoul, who supports the bill and is a sponsor, and then we ran an op-ed from Patricia Van Pelt, who's a fellow senator, Black senator, disputing that, you know, there is still this belief that it's going to harm Black communities. And what I just don't get, you know, it's gonna imprison more people of their communities. But you know what? There are so many Black law-abiding citizens who are trapped by all this violence. Where's their voice? Why aren't you being a voice for them? New York has shown that, at least in part, gangbangers understand that getting caught with a weapon the first time is not a big deal here. There, you got a three-year mandatory minimum sentence.
But do they serve three or do they serve a year and a half?
I think federal statutes require 85%. But still, they were much more careful. They know here that they don't have to, that they can walk around with loaded weapons even when they are felons, gang affiliated, all those aggravated causes.
And there will be no, my argument is, and I want to invest and all the other, you know, Cass, you're such a conservative. You don't want to
cold-hearted.
Cold-hearted, evil conservative. I'm talking about stuff I've listened to.
I know.
On our air. You're such a conservative. You don't want to help the people. I do. But who's going to invest money in communities where children are getting shot off the porch? Let's stop the shooting first. Then we can get the investment in. How do you do that otherwise? Anybody?
Exactly. I mean, it's one of the biggest fallacies that drives me nuts about criticism specifically aimed at you and at conservatives in general, that somehow we are hard-hearted. When in fact, you, in a lot of the columns, the anti-violence columns you've written, you're being a voice for these trapped law-abiding citizens in these neighborhoods that are war zones. But that gets completely lost
on
people.
Well, I don't care what they say. I'm from 5224 South Peoria. That's where I'm born. Was born. I've got friends still there, including one named Deshaun, and Deshaun's still in the neighborhood fighting a good fight every day. friend of mine, a chemical engineer. I don't know why he's living there. I tell him to move. He still wants to stay. Good luck to you. And we're going to have, you know, to talk about this, we're going to have Tim Evans on.
Great. I can't wait to hear what he says. And I have to run, but I'm going to leave you with another quote. I love to do this.
Please.
This is for you. This is a tweet from Bill Murray. You got to follow him on Twitter. It's hilarious. But I like this, and I think about it every day. Never waste your time trying to explain who you are to people who are committed to misunderstanding you.
And that's why we love Christian McQuarrie on the Chicago Way.
To score a 10 would be just fine, but I'd rather be dressed to the nines. It's a truth you can't refute. Nothing suits me like a suit.
As chief judge of the Cook County Circuit Court, Judge Timothy Evans doesn't do many interviews, but he's sitting in with me today on the Chicago Way. Why? Because I've given Tim and a few other judges some criticism over a new law being worked on in Springfield to put the political jacket on the judges if they show sentencing mercy to repeat gun offenders. Those are the gun offenders who kill most of the kids who will die this summer in the city street gang wars. As I said before, Tim and I go way back. I remember him as a young member of the Chicago City Council, then a mayoral candidate after the death of Harold Washington, a guy who was taken out by the Daleys and Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, a man who wore snappy beige Armani suits. When I criticize public officials in my column, they're always given an opportunity to have their say. And why do I do that? Because that, too, is part of the Chicago Way. A guy I've known for many, many years. I remember seeing him once at City Hall, resplendent in a beige Armani suit. And I said I had to go get myself one. Went over to Bigsby and Crothers, got myself a beige Armani suit, just like he did. He was an alderman then. I was a young reporter. Now I'm a columnist, and he's chief judge of the largest criminal court system in America, Judge Timothy Evans. Good morning, Judge.
It's a pleasure to see you, John. Good morning to you.
It's you still fit in that Armani suit?
You know, I wouldn't even try. That was before we had all this white hair and, right. and all those good things. But I remember those days. Those were some good days.
So when you hear people say, I'd like to go into politics, and you look back on your career, not only a lengthy time as chief judge, but also alderman. You were in the middle of the council wars, the whole business between yourself and Gene Sawyer, the succession after Harold Washington, all the stuff that happened. Would you say get into politics?
Absolutely. I would say public service is the best place to be. We desperately need those talented, capable young minds. And I think, as I started to share with a friend of mine, one of the hesitancies they have these days is the huge debt they acquire while they're getting their undergraduate degrees and other things.
Like their law degree.
Law degree is an example. Many of the people graduate with a law degree these days owing close to, if not exceeding, $100,000. And it's hard to take a public service position when you've got that kind of debt to start. So I think the public service commitment, though, is a commitment where they can get experience right away, where they can do something that is good for all the citizens and all the residents of this community, and we need more in that category.
You, what has changed in politics since you? I remember. Let me go back to, the Daleys tried to take you out three different times, as alderman of the fourth ward. The fourth time you lost, they were back in a person that I used to call, thought was a reformer then, who had sensible shoes. Now I think she's got another job in the county. I think she's president of the Cook County Board, Tony Preckwinkle. People don't remember, you know, who was with who and who wasn't with who. I do. So do you. So now that you look back on all that, what do you make of it?
Well, it's in the rearview mirror. Remember those days very well. I remember the tough battles that we had. I don't have any regrets at all. I think that we all learn from those experiences. I know from time to time people will reference that when President Preckwinkle and I have a disagreement, but that's 30 years ago.
But they don't, when they reference it, they don't mention that just the idea of Tony and Ty Kenner holding hands together in a campaign is funny, but who knows who Ty Kenner was, right?
Yeah, Ty Kenner was the alderman of the Third Ward at that time, and those were some interesting days. That last race that you referenced where she was the winner, you may recall that there were some interesting...
The Irish word is shenanigans.
All right, shenanigans. And the appellate court finally agreed that I was entitled to a recount. And then when we got ready for the recount, all the ballots were gone, all the applications were gone, there was nothing to count.
Isn't it funny how that happens?
Yes, that was a miracle. All right, disappeared.
So now you're chief judge of the circuit court, and something's been happening over the past, I'd say, 5-6 years that reminds me of years ago in the early 1990s in this city. The slaughter. I mean, people say, oh, it's the worst it's ever been. Actually, it was worse in the 1990s, but it's pretty bad today.
It is.
And every day it gets warmer, I expect more kids to get killed. What do you make of all this violence now?
Well,
and the responsibility or the response of the courts, the law enforcement, and the city of Chicago in dealing with it.
Well, I think it's the most obvious tragedy occurring in the city of Chicago today. And you're right. We know in the early 90s the carnage was even higher. But after that, the carnage went down. And all of a sudden, there's this flip going back up again. And I think that's what you're referencing. It is horrible. It is horrendous. And I think it's not a one approach that solves everything. I know some people have been referencing what's going on in Springfield.
I have. That's why you're here, Judge. I called out the judges and mentioned you as well. And I said, where's Judge Evans? Where are you going to get involved? Where are the judges? Where are they going to get involved? The issue is the legislation in Springfield that seems to want to put pressure on the judges if they depart or show mercy to people with gun convictions in their sentencing, that the judges have to write out why. That puts the jacket on the judges if the offender shoots someone else later, knowing all about how you've had a long career in politics, you understand about who wears the jacket. And I was a little critical, and because of that, I wanted you on to offer your rebuttal or explanation. So with that background, let me hear it.
All right. I thank you for the invitation to be here. And while as a judge, I never comment on pending legislation because, of course, we have to be impartial with respect to it. But I can tell you without any hesitation that if that legislation that you mentioned does pass, we will embrace it and we will enforce it as members of the judiciary without any hesitation. But I would rush to say that I don't believe that alone will be an answer to what we're describing here. And I think a better way to look at it is that that legislation you're describing is designed for some deterrence. I think it's better to join something like that with what I characterize as targeted interference, I'll call it. That is to say, to focus on other problems that are causing the kind of carnage that you're talking about. And this is the way I would characterize it. It's a targeted intervention that would include more jobs in those communities, more educational opportunities in those communities, a focus on stopping the illegal guns from getting in those communities, stopping the illegal drugs from getting into those communities, having an approach that would enable some of these young people who often are inclined to engage in sensation-seeking activities, not knowing exactly how to control their impulses, not realizing that there are consequences that flow from their sensitivity. have some way for those young people to receive the kind of mentoring that they deserve. This is the kind of intervention that I'm talking about.
I agree. I don't think any sane person would disagree with you, Your Honor. The problem is those of us who've been around know we've heard it before. I'm not trying to say that what you're saying is not valid. We've heard it. What I'm talking about is something specific, because all that other stuff takes time. And I'm thinking about it's warm in March. And when it gets warm in March, and we've already had record shooting this already this year on top of last year's 4,000 shot, more than 700 dead, I see that as an indicator we're going to have a terrible summer. I want concrete things done now.
So do I. And I think one of the reasons why this carnage has gone on is that no one is moving on the directions that I just described. This conflict resolution issue is what you see, this business of you did this to me, so now I got to do something to you, the revenge issue. All of that has to be addressed now. And I said to someone the other day, with 12,000 police officers, I think one of the things that they might do now is for all 50 wards, have some place in each ward where the kind of interventions that I'm talking about can take place, where the police can, even if they have to surround the place, the gangs could not intimidate. The gangs could not recruit. They couldn't drive through with shooting out the windows. The kids would have some place to come to play, but also some place to come to learn.
We just talked, we had Bob Mylon on a couple of weeks ago, former prosecutor, and you know him, who came up with an idea that was mischaracterized, even though I wrote it, others mischaracterized it as some sort of, you know, concentration camp thing. But basically he was talking about sealing off access to the hot districts, sealing off some access, and like limiting it so that if you're about to do a drive-by, you'd have to come through a checkpoint, and maybe you don't want to do the drive-by then. And that was characterized immediately as fascism, blah, you know, people were screaming, all the lefties.
Well, I'm not, of course, talking about anything like that. What I'm suggesting is that every community ought to have some way that children can exist in that community without having to worry about the kinds of carnages that you've been describing.
Well, I agree. But what are judges, what is your impression of what your colleagues tell you about this legislation? Because we know people talk, and this is seems to be targeted at the judges. What do they say about the political effort to have judges be the focus of this legislation?
Well, I think they say just what I've already indicated, that if this does become the law, they will follow it.
But don't they feel like they're
politically vulnerable? Let me share this with you. They know what they've been doing about gun repeat users already. And we've taken a look, for example, at statistics from 2014 to 2016. There were 9,998 incidents that involved guns.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those charges, about 70% of those cases that went to trial were convictions. And out of that, on average, the sentence was 8 years. And so the public doesn't know that. The public is hearing something else.
So you're saying that the average sentence for a defendant with one or more prior convictions, and I'm reading from a sheet your office just provided me, is almost 8 years.
Right. It's 7.9, as you say, approximately 8 years.
And that's the people that should be focused on.
That's
the
exactly
repeat
right.
offender.
That's
right?
Exactly right. And the public doesn't know that. And I'm so glad that you're giving me a chance to emphasize it, because the public has been told otherwise.
Why is that?
You know, I think people just misunderstand. They don't take a look at what we see every day.
But you've known Eddie Johnson for 30 years.
Well, I've known him
Probably longer since he was a kid.
I've known him for a while. I think he's a good man. I have great respect for him. And he's been willing to listen. I'm going to be talking to him. As you know, I entered a general order the other day requiring that people who are arrested by his officers be given an opportunity to have free legal assistance while they're in the police station. So he'll be coming to my office. We'll be talking about that. And I will give him statistics that I just shared with you. And I've shared statistics with him before. You may recall when his predecessor was here talking about the solutions of gun courts and all of that sort of thing, I gave him an analysis that was submitted by Northwestern University where every gun court in the area had been analyzed, and no gun court solved the problem, including New York. And so Superintendent Johnson has been willing to accept these kind of analyses from me, as I think he will, concerning the eight-year average that I just shared with you.
If your numbers are correct, and you're getting them from your court system,
yes,
then it would, I'd be led, if this is evidence that I'm speaking to a judge, then as a jury, I'd be led to believe that someone is letting these guys out early.
Well, you put your finger right on it. There are four or five ways they can get out earlier than the sentence that a judge gives. One is the parole board. Most people know about the parole board, but they play a major role. But it's not just the parole board. It also includes time served. If for example, they have been in the jail here before they go to prison, they get credit for the time they spend in jail
here.
So
I get eight. Let's walk it out. I get 8 years for my second UUW. I'm on 5224 South Peoria. I know that address because that's where I was born. And I shoot some other guy, black, you know, gangster disciple, whatever. And I shoot at some other kid, and I'm arrested now second time. I get 8 years. I spend a year, let's say, in county jail waiting for my trial.
Right, and that year comes right off of the 8 years.
And then I do day-for-day time.
Day-for-day time. And also, there is a provision that the wardens can cut the time by about 180 days, something like that.
On top of the day-for-day. So
yeah.
Out of 8 years, I do four. I take one of those years off.
For the time I spent in jail,
it's three, and then the warden can take more time off.
Right.
And then, you know where I am, Your Honor? I'm back at 5224 South Peoria Street,
right,
where John Cass was born, and I am...
And then somebody says, hey, why did that judge let John Cass out?
Right.
They think it was the judge, and the judge has done his job, and yet John Cass is back home.
So then somebody gives me a gun, and I cap some other kid, and I miss, and I shoot some child on his porch.
Yeah. Right. It's a tragedy. You just described what could happen today. And I just am so grateful that you've given me an opportunity to come here so that I can talk about some of these things so that the public will know what you and I know, and they can then try to put the blame where the blame belongs. And they can start working on those things that you and I said, yeah, people have been talking about, but nobody has taken any action about it. And I think that that's what we've got to do. We've got to make sure that the resources are there for drug rehabilitation. We got to make certain that the mental health opportunities are there so that these kids who are really suffering from PTSD, that they have been traumatized, they have to get help if you want to see this cycle stop. And I think the way to do it is not just talk about deterrence, but to combine that with these interventions that I'm describing. And if somebody says to you, John, hey, that's going to be expensive, talk about how expensive it is for our kids to be shot down in the street. That's expensive.
I can see, you know what, though? Because I started out back when I wanted to wear the Armani suit of Tim Evans, Alderman Evans, back then I was more liberal than I am now because I've just been around politics too long. And I don't.
We're working on you, John. You're going to be liberal
no
again.
No way, man. I see Quinn, Governor Quinn, spent $56 million. I don't even know where that money went on a bunch of guys with clipboards right before an election talking about gang intervention, right? And I don't want to see, that's not where I want to see the money.
No, and I'm not even talking about that kind of clipboard analysis.
You know where I'm going.
I do. I'm talking about actual jobs for the youth. Let me give you an example of how important this is. Somebody did an analysis of the 77 communities that are in the city of Chicago. And in one of those communities, between the ages of 16 and 19, 90% of those kids were unemployed. That's what gives the gang the entree, because they're the only ones hiring anybody in those neighborhoods. And I'm saying, as long as we ignore that and concentrate on deterrence, we're not going to solve the problem.
I got you. But in the short term, we have to save lives immediately, is my view, respectfully.
Yes.
I know, understand all that other stuff, but we have to do whatever you can to stop a few lives, children, from getting shot. Here's one tact I've been taking, and I haven't really been as tough as I have. I mean, I've been tough on a lot of people in my career, but I have not even tough on you. When you were an alderman and even as a judge on occasion. But I haven't been tough on the Black Caucus. I kind of let them slide a little bit. And these are, for those who don't know, these are elected officials who represent areas in the African American community. The institutional racism of much of media and politics suggests that everybody lives in the same kind of neighborhood, and that's not true. Some can live in Hyde Park Kenwood, where Judge Evans was an alderman. Some can be on the west side, where it's heroin highway and little white girls and with ponytails and daddy's BMW come down for their heroin. However, I don't see the Black Caucus taking the kind of responsibility that I would expect them to take, given the dynamics of what's going on politically and socially. Am I wrong here?
Well, I think you have to talk to them directly. Yes, Kwame Raoul worked and represents primarily the area that you describe, Hyde Park, Kenwood, and so forth.
Yeah, Kwame's taking a lead.
He's taking a lead. There are people who are equally interested in community safety who see it differently. They're debating this. I would not expect them all to be of one mind. They have different approaches to trying to solve this problem, and we'll see what they can come up with. I'm looking at it as you are. I'm not trying to in any way dictate what their solution should be. I'm a judge and not a legislator, although I have been a legislator, and that's why I can say I have a sense of what they're going through. You may recall there have been books written about what happened when, quote-unquote, this business of being tough on crime was the ringing solution. All it did was to fill up the jails. It didn't solve the problem. It loaded up the jails. And so some of the time people want to look at that and see if that's the proper solution or if they should look for some of these assets that I'm talking about being given to these communities.
Again, Tim, with respect, man, I've known you for 30 years now. We both know that people need jobs.
They do.
You cannot improve a neighborhood or get jobs to a neighborhood if people are getting capped off their porches. No one's going to invest in that neighborhood. That's what I try to tell my friends on the left. It's not going to happen. You can talk all you want about investment or whatever catchphrase, you know, Governor Quinn's $50 million clipboards for gangbanger program, but it's not going to cause any real change as long as you got killing. No one's going to. I'm not investing my money as a capitalist, a happy capitalist, in that community if my people are going to get shot.
Well,
you know this.
But it's which comes first, the chicken or the egg? That's the thing. I think that if you provide jobs, you give an opportunity to young people who think they have no other opportunity. And I realize that talking to somebody who has a choice where to invest, I realize that
businesses won't come back to
they
Western
consider
Avenue.
These things.
They're not going to come.
But I also see openings here. You've got land available. You've got the city in a position where they can offer some incentives. You've got the federal government in a position where they can offer some incentives. And some of these quote-unquote rich capitalists that you're talking about have big hearts. I don't say.
Yeah, but they're responsible to shareholders.
Well,
no one wants to just throw
yeah,
their money
but
away.
But keep this in mind. I think many of them feel as committed to those residents who are being shot down as people who live in those communities. And I don't write them off. I don't think they put dollars ahead of lives. I do believe if you can show them some incentives so that the money won't be wasted. I'm not talking about clipboard jobs.
Yeah, right.
I mean real jobs so that these kids can get the training. I think they will come in, and I think they will put their heart and their mind in it as well.
We're talking with Chief Judge Timothy Evans, Timothy C, right?
Yes.
C stands for?
Charles.
Charles.
Well,
Timothy
you got a good
I've written it, Alderman Timothy C. Evans, fourth. I must have written that 5,000 times. And now he's the chief judge. He makes some news today by suggesting that the criticism of judges may be misplaced, and that what we have to look at is the state for letting these people out. These people, meaning, I don't mean any offense except to felons who like to shoot people, okay? And I don't care if I offend them. Judge Evans, that's how I would interpret this, that Judge Evans takes a shot. Put your City Hall hat on, right? You know how it is. Back, we come out of press conferences in those days. Franny Spielman's here, me, Bob Crawford, Bob Davis. And we ask Tim Evans, and he says this. He knows the headline's going to be, Tim Evans points finger at state prison system for releasing these guys early, or the legislature for not making the laws, the penalties longer.
But yes? Today, you have to keep in mind, I'm no longer an alderman, and what I'm doing is shedding light on what should take place, and that light should be targeted intervention with these other issues. That it's not one or the other, it's both. And I think that...
Yes, but what about specifically with respect to the state's responsibility?
Oh, yes, they have to take a look at that.
Down?
I think that what may have been well-intentioned has resulted in people getting out much earlier than somebody might expect. And what I'm trying to say, it's not because the judges are failing to sentence. I'm saying that there are other laws that take place here. And that's what I'm doing. I'm pointing a finger at the other laws that judges don't have anything to do with.
And I'm laws are made by lawmakers.
There you go.
In this state, lawmakers are Democrats run by a guy that you and I both know, a little Irishman from the southwest side of Chicago. Have you had any talk with Mike Madigan?
No.
Not over whether or not they tried to take you out as chief judge with Tom Murphy and Tommy Allen, but on this subject.
No, I haven't. I know they're busy down there. And this business of getting elected chief judge, it's not, as our friend Harold Washington once said, it's not beanbag in Chicago. We know that. And this is my sixth term as chief judge. If I get a chance to complete this term, I will be the longest serving chief judge in the history of the...
Longer than Harry Comerford?
Harry Comerford, yes, even longer than Harry.
Wow.
So I appreciate the support I've gotten from our judges in the Circuit Court of Cook County and the people who put me there. You know, I had to run for retention recently, and the public reelected me for another six-year term, and I got the highest vote of all the judges running for retention who were Circuit Court judges.
I've got to ask you, and we know we have to go, but there was that case of the young judge in Bridgeview letting her friend sit in for her and play judge.
Yeah.
And then
that's the Turner Crawford case.
What happened with that? Is she still a judge now?
No. Crawford, who ran for judge, was quote unquote elected but not seated because the Supreme Court refused to permit her to be sworn in.
This is the one that sat in and pretended to be a judge.
That's exactly.
What about the one who was a judge?
And the judge Turner, who is the one who permitted that to take place, unfortunately, has been diagnosed with a brain disease. And I spoke recently to her lawyer, who tells me that she's preparing to step down. She's on medical leave right now, not hearing any cases, hasn't heard any case since this incident occurred that you just described.
Yeah. I would like this to be a monthly feature where Judge Evans comes on and talks about cases in his courtrooms and throughout the Cook County system. I don't think he'll ever speak about them, but it would be fun to try. Judge Evans, thanks for being here.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be invited.
And anytime I write something that you don't like, as you did before, you call me and you say, hey, right?
Fair
Let's
enough.
Talk about it, okay?
I appreciate you, John. Thank you.
I'd like to thank you for spending time with Jeff Carlin, Kristen McQuarrie, Chief Judge Tim Evans, and your humble servant, nationally syndicated columnist. You know who he is. See you again along the Chicago Way.